I'll regret having to end that, but I will if you insist on pressing for a different dynamic in our relationship. I think I'll get that wine after all. She carried the dishes inside, rinsed them. The headache was going to plague her, so she took a tonic before selecting a bottle of wine, taking out the proper glasses. She didn't allow herself to think, couldn't allow herself to feel. Since there was no going back, no crisscrossing over paths that were already long overgrown, the only direction was forward. But when she stepped outside, he was gone. Though her stomach fluttered once, she sat at the table in her midsummer garden and toasted her independence, and the wine was bitter on her tongue. He sent her flowers at the bookstore the next day, simple and cheerful zinnias, which in the language of flowers meant he was thinking of her. She doubted he knew the charming meaning of a bouquet of zinnias, but puzzled over them nonetheless as she selected a suitable vase. It wasn't like him to send flowers, she mused. Even when they'd been madly in love, he'd rarely thought to make such romantic gestures. The card was explanation enough, she supposed. It read, "I'm sorry, Sam." When she found herself smiling over the flowers instead of getting on with her work, she carried the vase downstairs and set it on the table by the fireplace. "Ah, those sweet and cheerful." Gladys Macy slipped up beside her to coo over the bouquet. "From your garden?"
"No, actually. They were a gift."
"Nothing perks a woman up more than getting flowers, unless it's getting something sparkly," Gladys added with a wink. She slid a discreet glance over to Mia's left hand, but not discreet enough.
"I've found that a woman who buys herself something sparkly ends up with something that suits her own taste."
"Not the same, though." Gladys gave Mia's arm a quick squeeze. "Carl bought me a pair of earrings on my last birthday. Ugly as homemade sin, no question about it, but I feel good every time I put them on. I was just on my way up to the cafe to see how Nell's getting on."
"She's getting on beautifully. When she tells you she thinks she's started to show, just go along with her. It makes her happy."
"Will do. I just pre-ordered Caroline Trump's new book. We're all excited about her coming here. I've been delegated by the book club to ask if she would agree to doing a book discussion just before the official signing."
"I'll see if I can set it up."
"Just let us know. We are going to give her a real Three Sisters welcome."
"I'm counting on it."
Mia made the call to New York herself. Once the wheels were set in motion, she checked her book orders, called her distributor to nag about a delay in a selection of note cards, then picked up the newest batch of email orders. As Lulu was busy, Mia filled them herself, slipping in the notice that signed copies of Trump's book would be available. Then she carted them down to the post office. She ran into Mac as she came out again.
"Hello, handsome."
"Just the woman I was looking for."
Smiling, she slid her arm through his.
"That's what they all say. Are you on your way to the cafe to meet Ripley for lunch?"
"I was on my way to the bookstore to talk to you."
He glanced down, noted that she was wearing heels.
"No point asking you to take a walk on the beach with me."
"Shoes come off."
"You'll ruin your stockings."
"I'm not wearing any."
"Oh."
He flushed a bit, delighting her.
"Well, let's walk then, if you've got a few minutes."
"I always have a few minutes for attractive men. How's your book going?"
"Fits and starts."
"When it's finished, I expect Cafe Book to host your first signing."
"Non-fiction books with academic bents on paranormal science don't exactly draw in the crowds for book signings."
"They will at Cafe Book," she retorted.
They crossed the street, winding through the pedestrian traffic. Families returning from the beach, their skin pink, their eyes blurry from the sunlight, trudged into town for lunch or a cold drink. Others, loaded with coolers, umbrellas, towels, sunscreen, walked toward the sand and surf. Mia slipped off her shoes.
"By the time the solstice crowd thins out, the 4th of July crowd will stream in. We're having a good summer on the sisters."
"Summers go fast."
"You're thinking of September. I know you're concerned, but I have it under control."
When he didn't speak, she tipped down her sunglasses and peered over the tops.
"You don't think so?"
He struggled with the guilt of keeping Lulu's incident from her, weighing it against her peace of mind.
I think you can handle just about anything that gets tossed at you.
But?
But, he laid a hand over the one she'd curled around his arm, you play by the rules.
Not honoring the rules is what put us here.
Agreed. I care about you, Mia.
She leaned her head on his shoulder. Something about him made her want to cuddle.
I know you do. You added to my life when you came into it. What you and Ripley have together adds to it.
I like Sam.
She retreated, lifting her head.
Why shouldn't you?
Look, I'm not prying. Okay, he corrected, I'm prying, but only for practical and scientific purposes.
Bullshit,
she said, laughing.
All right, mostly for those purposes. If I don't know where the two of you stand, I can't weigh my theories and hypotheses. I can't calculate what we might need to do.
Then I'll tell you, we're, for the most part, enjoying each other. Our relationship is primarily comfortable and largely superficial. As far as I'm concerned, it's going to stay that way.
Okay.
You don't approve.
It's not for me to approve. It's for you to choose.
Exactly. Love, consuming and obsessive, destroyed the last sister. She refused to live without it. I refused to live with it.
If that was enough, it would be over.
It will be over, she promised him.
Look, Mia, there was a time when I believed it could be that simple.
And now you don't?
No, I don't, he confirmed. I was up at your place this morning. You said I could go up and take readings after the solstice.
And?
I went up. Took Mulder with me so he could get some exercise. To keep it simple, I'll say I started getting snags in the readings right at the edge of your front lawn. Positive and negative spikes, like a...
He slammed the heels of his hands together to demonstrate.
One ramming against the other. I got similar readings around the verge, straight toward the cliffs on the other side of the lighthouse and into the forest.
I haven't been lax in protection.
No, you haven't, and it's a damn good thing. We followed the readings away from the clearing, away from the heart. My sensors started going wild, and so did Mulder. He damn near snapped the leash. There's a path of negative energy. I could follow it, the way it circled around, like an animal might stalk prey.
I know it's there, Mac. I don't ignore it.
Mia, it's gaining strength. There were places along that path where everything was dead. Brush, trees, birds. The pup stopped straining at the leash and just curled up, crying. I had to carry him, and he didn't stop shaking until we'd come out again. We came out following that path at the north end of your cliffs.
Have Ripley do a cleansing spell on the puppy and on you. If she doesn't remember the ritual, Mia!
Mac grabbed her hand in a tight grip. Don't you understand what I'm saying? It has you surrounded.
14.
What did she say when you told her?
As Sam paced his office, Mac lifted his hands.
That it has surrounded her all her life, but is just being more blatant about it now. Yeah, I can just hear her saying that. When we were... Before I left the island, we talked about it a couple of times. She'd read up on it more than I had at that point. That's probably still true. The woman can absorb a book before most of us get to chapter 2. She was so confident about it all. Good would overcome evil, as long as good was strong and faithful. She's both of those. What I didn't tell her was that my readings picked up several different... Let's call them fingerprints, on her side of the line. I'm assuming they'd be yours. Just because she doesn't want my protection doesn't mean she isn't going to get it. Whatever you're doing, keep it up.
Sam wandered to the window, looked out on the new terrace across the street. She had taken in the tables she'd put out for the weekend, and the crew was setting the slate in place.
How did she look today? Spectacular. You should see her when she uses real power.
Then he glanced back at Mac.
But I suppose you have. Late last winter, a call to the four elements. It took me half a day to come to my senses. I wonder if she uses the Wiccan equivalent of a dimmer switch on that face of hers for the everyday. No, the power punches it up as if it wasn't enough already. Beauty like that blinds a man, muddles the brain. I've asked myself if it's that that pulls me to her. I can't answer that. I can, now. I've loved her all my life, before I knew what love meant, after I tried to redefine it. It's a nasty blow to finally understand that now, when she doesn't love me, or won't. He turned back, eased a hip onto the edge of his desk. All right, scientifically speaking, or theoretically, academically, whatever you like, is my being here, no, loving her now, putting her at greater risk? Your feelings don't count. As soon as he said it, Mac winced. I didn't mean that the way it sounded. I get it. It's her feelings that tip the scale, one way or the other. In that case, I'm going to assume that trying to rekindle her feelings or change them won't hurt her. If you think otherwise, I'll hold off on that until after September. I can't tell you. Then I'm going with a gut. If nothing else, I intend to be as close to her as I can when it comes to the sticking point. Even the circle can use a guard dog.
He called her that night at home, just as she was settling in with a book and a glass of wine.
I hope I'm not catching you at a bad time.
No.
Mia pursed her lips as she studied the play of light and liquid in her glass.
Thank you for the flowers. They're lovely.
I'm glad you like them. I'm sorry we argued yesterday, that I took my mood out on you.
Accepted.
Good. Then I hope you'll have dinner with me. We can call it a business meeting to discuss the details of Caroline's tour stop. Would tomorrow night suit your schedule?
So pleasant, she thought, so smooth. That was when you had to watch him most carefully. Yes, I suppose.
I'll pick you up then. Say, 7:30?
There's no need. I can easily walk across the street.
I had somewhere else in mind, and you usually take the late afternoon and evening off on Tuesdays. No point in you changing your routine just for this. I'll pick you up. We'll keep it casual.
She'd nearly asked for specifics before she decided he wanted her to. Casual's just fine. I'll see you tomorrow. She hung up, went back to her book, but found it hard to concentrate. The day before, she thought, they'd raked up the past with all its wounds and bitterness. Had she trapped him by being so blindly in love, so sure of her own feelings and so confident of his? Could he have been so selfish, so cold, that he had cast her aside rather than share his own mind and heart, rather than give her a chance to understand? How foolish and short-sighted of both of them, she thought now. Still, blame, excuses, reasons, none of that changed what had happened. None of it changed, nor would she have it change, who each of them had become. It was best to bury it again and go on as they were, cautious friends, careless lovers, with no plans to be more. From his current attitude, it seemed he agreed with her on that one point. And yet, after setting it aside, Mia said to her cat, "He's up to something." On the other side of the village, Sam made a hurried second call.
"Nell, it's Sam Logan. I have an emergency, a confidential emergency."
It was a matter of sharpening the details. To hone some of them, he had to wait until Mia left the store the next afternoon. He also concluded that the only way to deal with Lulu was to be direct. Inside Cafe Book, he gestured her over to a display of CDs. A jewel case titled Forest Serenity was tucked in a slot labeled Playing Now.
"Which one's her favorite?"
Lulu adjusted her glasses. "Why?"
"Because I'd like to buy her favorite."
Always ready for a sale, Lulu ran her tongue around her teeth.
"You buy five, you get the sixth half price." "I don't need half a dozen."
He broke off, hissed.
"Okay, I'll buy six. Which ones are her favorites?" She likes them all, or they wouldn't be in here. It's her store, isn't it?
Right.
He started to pluck some at random. Don't be in such a damn hurry. She brushed his fingers aside. When she gets in before me, she tends to put one of these three on.
Then I'll take these three. And these.
We sell books, too.
I know you sell books. I'm just... What would you recommend?
She hosed him, but Sam decided it was money well spent, or well enough. It wasn't as if he couldn't use a $100 coffee table book on Renaissance art, or this week's top 10 bestsellers, or the 6 CDs and the 3 audio tapes, and the rest of it. At least when Lulu had rung him up, she'd laughed and meant it. He left Cafe Book several $100 poorer, and with a great deal left to do in a short amount of time. Despite that, he arrived at Mia's door at exactly 7:30. She was just as prompt, and stepped out carrying a slim file.
Notes, she said, on the event, and copies of the flyer that went out, the store's newsletter, and the ad that will run for the next 2 weeks.
Can't wait to see them.
He gestured toward his car.
Want the top up?
No, let's keep it down.
She noted he'd meant casual. He wore dark trousers and a blue T-shirt. Once again, she had to suppress the urge to ask him where they were going for dinner.
By the way,
he gave her a light kiss before he opened the car door for her. You look wonderful. All right, she thought. Smooth and lightly flirtatious. She could play that game.
I was just thinking the same thing about you, she replied as she slid into the car. It's a lovely evening for a drive down the coast.
My thoughts exactly.
He walked around to the driver's side, got behind the wheel.
Music?
Yes.
She settled back, calculating how much time she would allow him to seduce her, then lifted her eyebrows in surprise as flutes played on the speakers.
An odd choice for you, she commented. You were always more fond of rock, particularly if it was loud enough to slam the eardrums.
No harm in changing the pace now and then, exploring different avenues.
He lifted her hand, kissed it,
broadening horizons. But if you'd prefer something else...
No, this is fine. And aren't we accommodating?
She shifted, her hair flying around her face.
The car handles well.
Want to try it out?
Maybe on the way back.
Deciding against trying to puzzle him out, for now she sat back to enjoy the rest of the ride. And when he drove through the village without stopping, she tensed up again. She studied the yellow cottage when he parked in front.
Odd. I didn't realize you'd turned this into a restaurant. I believe that's a violation of your lease.
It's temporary.
He got out and came around the car for her.
Don't say anything yet.
Again, he lifted her hand, brushed his lips over her knuckles.
If you decide you'd rather go somewhere else, we'll go somewhere else. But give it a minute first.
Still holding her hand, he led her around the house, rather than into it. On the freshly mowed lawn, a white cloth was spread. It was surrounded by candles not yet lit, and pillows in rich colors and fabrics. Beside it was a long basket overflowing with lilacs. He lifted it.
For you.
She studied the flowers, then his face.
Lilacs are out of season.
Tell me about it,
he said, holding the basket out to her until she took it.
You always liked them.
Yes, I've always liked them. What is all this, Sam?
I thought we'd have a picnic, a compromise between business and pleasure, public and private.
A picnic.
You always liked them, too.
He leaned forward to brush his lips over her cheek.
Why don't we have a glass of wine and you can think about the idea?
To refuse would be both cold and ungracious, and she admitted, cowardly. Just because she'd once imagined them happily married and having picnics on the lawn by their own little cottage was no reason to slap at him for trying to give her a pleasant evening.
I'd love some wine.
I'll be right back with it.
She let out a little sigh when he was out of earshot, and when the back door swung shut behind him, she lifted the basket of lilacs and buried her face in them. Moments later, she heard the music of harp and pipe drifting from the house. With a shake of her head, she sat down on one of the pillows,
put the basket of flowers beside her and waited for him to come back. He brought not only wine, but caviar. Some picnic. He sat, and in an almost absent gesture, lit the candles.
Sitting on the grass doesn't mean you can't eat well.
He poured the wine, tapped his glass to hers.
Slancha.
She nodded in acknowledgment of the Irish toast.
You've been tending the little garden.
In my limited capacity. Did you plant it?
Some of it, and some is Nell's doing.
I can feel her in the house.
He heaped beluga on a toast point.
Her joy in it,
he said, and offered the caviar to Mia.
Joy is one of her greatest gifts. When you look at her, you don't see the horror she's been through. It's been an education to watch her finish discovering herself.
How do you mean?
With us, it always was, the knowing. With Nell, it was finally unlocking a door, then stepping through it and finding a room full of fascinating treasures. The first magic I showed her was how to stir the air. Her face when she did it, it was wonderful.
I never taught anyone. I did attend a weekend seminar on Wicca a few years ago, though.
Really?
She licked caviar off her thumb. And how was that?
It was earnest. I went on impulse and actually met a few interesting people, some of them with power. One of the lectures dealt with the Salem trials and segued into Three Sisters Island.
He helped himself to the caviar.
They had most of the facts, but not the spirit, not the heart. This place.
He skimmed the woods, listened to the beat of the sea.
It can't be summed up in a 50-minute lecture.
He looked back at her.
Will you stay?
I never left.
No.
He brushed her hand with his.
For dinner.
She picked up another toast point.
Yes.
He topped off her wine before he rose.
It'll take me a minute.
I'll give you a hand.
No, it's under control.
Under control, he thought, as he went back to the kitchen, thanks to Nell. Not only had she prepared everything and delivered it, but she'd left him a detailed list of instructions, one, he'd discovered, that even the culinary retarded could follow. Blessing Nell, he managed to serve the tomato slices in oil and herbs and the cold lobster.
It's lovely.
Mia stretched out comfortably as she enjoyed the meal.
I had no idea you were such a whiz in the kitchen.
Untapped talents, he said, and smoothly changed the subject. I'm thinking of buying a boat.
Are you? John Bigelow still makes wooden boats to order, though he only does one or two a year now.
I'll go see him. Do you do any sailing now?
Occasionally, but it was never a passion of mine.
I remember.
He touched her hair. You preferred watching boats to being on one.
Or being in the water rather than on it.
She glanced over as a group of teenagers raced by, using the shortcut from one of the neighboring summer rentals to the beach.
Mr. Bigelow rents boats, too. But if you want to try your hand again before you buy, you're better off talking to Drake at Seafarer. He's built up a very nice rental business.
Drake Birmingham? I haven't seen him since I've been back. Or Stacy. How are they?
They're divorced. She took the kids, they had two, and moved to Boston. Drake remarried about 6 years ago. Connie Ripley. They have a little boy.
Connie Ripley.
Sam flipped through mental images as he tried to place her.
Big brunette with a lot of teeth?
That would be Connie.
She was just ahead of me in school,
he recalled.
Drake must be at least...
He's on the other side of 50.
Mia twirled her wine glass by the stem. The age difference and the speculation about a blistering affair between them causing the marriage to break up was the hot topic on island for a good 6 months. She plucked up another bite of lobster.
Nell really outdid herself. The lobster's delicious.
He winced. Tagged. Do I lose points?
Not at all. By hiring Three Sisters Catering, you show wisdom and good taste. Now,
she crossed her legs, picked up her file.
I love looking at you.
He traced a fingertip over her ankle.
Any light, any angle. But just now, when the sun's going down and the candles are tossing light, I love looking at you.
It fluttered in her blood,
the words, the tone, the look in his eyes as he shifted toward her. Lightly his hand cupped the back of her neck. Sweetly his lips rubbed against hers. The flutter turned to a melting. She breathed him in, along with the scent of lilacs and candle wax, and her head took one long, lazy spin.
Sorry.
He pressed a kiss to her forehead, then eased back.
There are moments when I can't keep my hands off you. Let's see what you've got here.
What she had was a case of weak knees and dizzy confusion. He'd kissed her bones away one moment and was now briskly reviewing her file.
What is this about, Sam?
Business and pleasure, he said absently, and skimmed his hand down her back before taking out her copy of the upcoming ad. This is great. Did you design it?
Settle down, she ordered herself.
Yes.
You should send a copy to her publicist.
Done.
Good. I've already seen the flyer, but I don't think I told you how effective it is.
Thank you.
Problem? He asked nonchalantly.
She felt her teeth clench at his mild question. Irritated that she was irritated, Mia composed herself.
No, I appreciate your input.
She took a deep breath.
I really do. This is a big event for the store. I want it done not just right, but perfectly.
I'm sure Caroline's going to enjoy herself.
There was something, some subtle something, in the way he said the name.
You know her personally?
Yeah. This is a nice touch, having Nell make a cake that reproduces the book jacket. The flowers. You may want to change them to pink roses. I seem to recall she prefers those.
You seem to recall.
Uh-huh. I see here you're planning to have champagne and chocolate in her suite as a welcome gift from the store. I'd suggest, since the hotel would already provide this amenity, that we add a couple of things and combine it, from the hotel and the store.
Mia tapped her fingers on her knee, then made herself stop.
That's an excellent idea. Perhaps some candles, a book on the island, that sort of thing.
Perfect.
He skimmed through the email and faxed correspondence between Mia and the publicist, nodded.
I can't see you've missed a trick. So?
He laid the folder aside, leaned toward her again. When his mouth was a breath from hers, she pressed a hand to his chest, smiled.
I'd like to freshen up.
She got to her feet, took her wine with her, and walked into the house. Once in the kitchen, she took a good look around. It was admirably tidy, but then she doubted if he used it, except for brewing his first hit of coffee in the morning. He'd always been a cliché in the kitchen, the man who could burn water. She saw Nell's instruction sheet lying on the counter, and softened. She wandered into the living room, pursing her lips in consideration when she spotted the coffee table book. There were candles here as well, and he used them. It made her wonder what rituals and meditation techniques he practiced when he was alone. Like her, he'd always been a solitary witch. There were no photographs, but she hadn't expected them. The pair of lovely watercolors on the wall was unexpected. Garden scenes, she mused, soft and serene. It surprised her that he hadn't selected more dramatic and bold images. Other than the candles and paintings, and the obviously new and unread book, there was little of Sam Logan in the living area of the cottage. He hadn't surrounded himself with the bits of comfort that were so essential to her. No flowers or little pots of plants, no bowls of colorful stones or glass. Since she had pried this far, and she reminded herself she was both his lover and his landlord, she didn't scruple to walk into his bedroom. There was more of him here, the scent, the feel. The old iron bed she'd bought for the cottage was made up in an almost militarily efficient dark blue spread. The floors were bare, but there was a book on his nightstand, a thriller that she'd enjoyed herself, marked with one of his business cards. The single painting here was bold and dramatic. An old stone altar rose out of rocky ground into a sky vivid with the triumphant red streaks of sunrise. On his dresser was a large and lovely chunk of sodalite that she imagined he used for meditation. His windows were open, and she could smell the lavender she'd planted herself. Because it made her yearn, the simplicity, the fragrance, that almost ridiculously masculine sense of him, she turned away from it. In the tiny bathroom, she freshened her lipstick, dabbed the perfumed oil she had made herself on her throat, her wrists. Since Sam was priming her for a seduction, she would accommodate him, but not until she was home again on her own ground. She could play toy and tease just as skillfully as he. When she came back out, he'd already switched the dinner service for glass bowls filled with ripe red strawberries and rich whipped cream.
"I wasn't sure if you wanted coffee or more wine."
"Wine."
A confident woman, she thought, could afford to be just a bit reckless.
Night was sliding in. She sat beside him, letting her fingers dance through his hair before she reached for a berry.
"I had no idea."
Deliberately watching him, she ran her tongue over the berry, then nipped in.
"That you were interested in Renaissance art."
Some circuit in his brain seemed to cross wires. He could almost hear it fizzle. "What?"
"Renaissance art."
She dipped her finger into the cream, licked it off.
"The book in your living room?"
"The... oh."
He managed to tear his gaze away from her mouth.
"Yes, it's a fascinating period."
She waited until he'd coated a berry with cream, then leaned over playfully and took a bite of it.
"Mmm,"
she purred, and slid her tongue over her top lip.
"Do you prefer Tintoretto's depiction of the Annunciation, or Erte's?"
Another circuit snapped. "Both are brilliant."
"Oh, absolutely. Except, of course, Erte was a sculptor, Art Deco, and born centuries after the Renaissance."
"I assumed you were referring to Giovanni Erte, an obscure and impoverished Renaissance artist who died tragically of scurvy. He was very underappreciated."
The laugh rolled out of her and tightened every muscle in his stomach.
"Oh, that Erte! I stand corrected."
This time she nipped his bottom lip instead of a berry.
"You're awfully cute, aren't you?" "I paid through the nose for that book. I imagine Lulu's still cackling about it."
He let her feed him a berry.
"I went in to buy some music and came out with 50 pounds of books."
"I like the music."
She lay back across the white cloth, her head on an emerald green pillow.
"It relaxes me, makes me think about floating in a warm river in a shady wood."
"Mmm. My head's full of wine."
She stretched, lazily, so the thin fabric of her dress slithered over her curves.
"I don't suppose I'll be able to drive your sexy car tonight after all."
She waited for him to tell her she could drive it in the morning, to ask her to come inside, to stay with him, and when he lay beside her, traced a fingertip down her throat over the rise of her breasts, she smiled.
"We can take a walk. Let the sea air clear your head a bit."
He caught the flicker of surprise on her face just before he lowered his mouth to hers. He nibbled, nipped, let his hands roam. He felt her yield, the softening of her body, the quickening of her pulse. To torment them both, he trailed his fingers along her leg, skimming them under her dress to the warm, silky skin of her thigh, circling the witch mark.
"Unless..."
He slid a finger under the edge of her panties at the hip, closed his teeth lightly. Lightly, over her breast, through the soft cotton of her dress.
"You're not in the mood for a walk."
She felt more than reckless now and arched her hips in invitation.
"No, a walk isn't what I'm in the mood for."
"Then..."
He bit, just a little harder.
"I'll drive."
And when he rose, held out a hand, she gaped at him.
"Drive?"
"Drive you home."
Seeing her in speechless shock was, he thought, nearly as satisfying as... No, not even close to as satisfying, he admitted, but it was precisely the reaction he'd hoped for. He pulled her to her feet, then bent down to pick up her file and her flowers.
"Don't want to forget these."
She recalculated on the drive home. He assumed, correctly, she thought, that she wouldn't stay with him at the cottage, and he'd decided, also correctly, that in order to complete the seduction he would need to maneuver her into her own bed, And that, Mia thought as she leaned back to watch the stars, was exactly where she wanted him. Since he'd gone to so much trouble, and it had been sweet of him, she would let him persuade her. Once they'd had sex, her mind and her body would be back on an even keel. When they pulled up at her house, she felt fully in control of the situation.
It was a lovely evening, absolutely lovely.
The look she sent him was as warm as her voice as he walked with her to the door.
Thanks again for the flowers.
You're welcome. At the door, with her wind chimes singing and the lamplight glowing against the windows, he ran his hands up her arms, down again.
Come out with me again. I'll rent a boat, and we can spend a lazy day on the water. Swim.
Maybe.
He cupped her face in his hands, tangled them in her hair as he kissed her, going deeper when she made a quiet sound of pleasure. When she pressed invitingly against him, he reached behind her, opened the door.
Better go in,
he murmured against her mouth. Yes, better.
Nearly dizzy with need, she stepped into the house and, turning, caressed his cheek. He thought she looked like a siren.
I'll call you.
With a hand that he considered admirably steady, he pulled the door closed between them. They had, he thought as he walked to the car, just had their first official date in 11 years, and it had been a doozy.
15. Sneaky bastard! No one had managed to get her so churned up since...
Well, Mia admitted, no one had managed to get her so churned up since Sam Logan, and he was better at it now. Then again, she was better at banking her sexual urges than she'd once been. She'd had lovers over the years, but they'd been few and far between. As time had passed, she discovered that while she enjoyed the casual flirtation, she very rarely felt satisfied or content after having a man in her bed. So she'd stopped at flirtations. It was something she considered a practical rather than an emotional decision. The energy and power she might have channeled into that area of physicality had gone instead into her craft. There was no doubt in her mind that she was a better witch for the period of self-imposed celibacy. There was no reason whatsoever why she couldn't apply the same habit now. Since Sam hadn't been in her bed for more than 2 weeks, it seemed the most logical choice. In any case, she was much too busy to worry about Sam or sex, or just why he wasn't following through on any of that maddening foreplay.
You didn't have to come back for this,
she said to Nell as she rearranged the cafe tables.
I wanted to come back. I'm as excited about the signing tomorrow as you are. I'll get the chair for that.
No, you won't. No lifting, period. As she set the chairs herself, Mia kicked the one Ripley was slouched in.
You could get off your ass and help.
Hey, you don't pay me. I'm just hanging out here so I don't have to hang out at home while this male bonding barbecue ritual is going on. I hope to hell Mac doesn't blow something up.
It's a charcoal grill, Nell reminded her. Charcoal doesn't explode.
You don't know my guy like I know my guy.
Between the three of them, they should be able to get it going and grill some steaks.
The image of Zack grilling burgers on their own deck flashed in Nell's mind and made her shudder.
But God help your poor kitchen.
Least of my worries. Ripley crossed her feet at the ankles, legs stretched out, and watched in amusement as Mia continued to change the table arrangement. Now, that one there, she jerked her thumb toward Mia. She's got plenty of worries. See the line she gets between her eyebrows? Means she's feeling bitchy.
I don't have a line between my eyebrows.
And vanity had Mia smoothing it out.
Nor am I feeling bitchy. Slightly stressed, perhaps. Which is why the barbecue's such a good idea.
Nell walked over to the display table and began to toy with a design for the featured author's book.
You'll relax, have an evening with friends, and be clear-headed for tomorrow. I'm glad Sam thought of it.
He's always thinking, Mia concluded, but Ripley and Nell could hear the underlying edge to her statement.
So, how did you like the concert on the beach the other night? Ripley asked her. It was fine.
And the moonlight sail after the fireworks on the 4th?
Dandy.
See, Ripley nodded toward Nell. Told you she was feeling bitchy.
I am not feeling bitchy.
Mia sat down a chair with an ill-tempered little slap.
Are you looking for a fight?
Nope, I'm looking for a beer, Ripley replied, and sauntered into the cafe's kitchen to help herself.
It's going to be a wonderful event, Mia.
Ready to soothe, Nell continued to stack books.
It'll be beautiful when you get the flowers in here tomorrow, and the refreshments are completely under control. Wait until you see the cake.
I'm not worried about the flowers or the refreshments.
When you see how many customers start lining up, you'll feel better.
I'm not worried about the customers, or not any more than I should be. Mia dropped into a chair.
For once, Ripley is right. I am feeling bitchy.
Is that a euphemism? Ripley asked as she came out with her beer.
Oh, shut up.
Mia dragged her hands through her hair.
He's using sex, or rather using the lack of sex, to keep me edgy. Candlelight picnics, moonlight sails, long walks. He sends flowers every couple of days.
But no sex? Mia leveled a look at Ripley.
There's considerable foreplay, Mia snapped. Then he dumps me at my front door and walks off. The next day I get flowers. He calls every day, and twice I've gone home and found a little gift at the front door, a pot of rosemary trained in the shape of a heart, a little pottery dragon. When we're out, he's absolutely charming.
The bastard, Ripley slammed her hand on the table. Hanging's too good for him.
He's using sex, Mia complained.
No, he's not.
With a dreamy smile, Nell brushed a hand over Mia's hair.
Sex has nothing to do with it. He's using romance. He's courting you.
He is not.
Flowers, candlelight, long walks, thoughtful little gifts.
Nell ticked the list off on her fingers.
Time and attention. That spells courtship to me. Sam and I passed the courtship stage a number of years ago, and that courtship didn't include flowers and little gifts.
Maybe he's trying to make up for that.
He doesn't have to make up for anything. I don't want him making up for anything.
Jittery, she got to her feet, walked over to shut the terrace doors.
He doesn't want the traditional package any more than I do. Now, he just wants...
And that was the trouble, Mia realized. She had no clear idea what he wanted this time around either.
He's got you scared, Ripley said quietly. He doesn't. He absolutely does not.
He never scared you before. You always had your course plotted.
It's still plotted. I know what I'm doing. I know where I'm going. That hasn't changed.
Even as she said it, she felt a sly chill whisper over her skin.
Mia?
There was both sympathy and patience in Nell's voice.
Are you still in love with him? Do you think I'd risk letting him into my heart again? That I'd risk that, not knowing the cost?
Steadier now, Mia crossed over to finish the display.
I know my responsibility to this island, its people, to my gift. Love for me is an absolute. I couldn't survive it again. And I have to survive to fulfill my destiny.
And if he is your destiny?
I thought that once. I was wrong. When the time comes, the circle will hold.
At the house on the bluff, three men watched the flames spurt from the charcoal grill with the same intense fascination as the cavemen watched their tribal fire.
Going good,
Zack commented, and nodded at Sam.
See, I told you we could do it with good old Yankee know-how. We didn't need any hocus-pocus crap.
Good old Yankee know-how, Sam drawled. An entire bag of charcoal and a half gallon of lighter fluid.
I can't help it if his grill's defective.
This is a brand new grill, Mac protested. This is its virgin run.
Which is why it needs the hot flame. Has to be cured.
Zack tipped back his beer. Mac looked on sadly as the inside of his shiny red grill blackened.
If this sucker melts, Ripley's gonna kill me.
It's goddamn cast iron.
Zack gave it a little boot with his foot.
Speaking of Rip, where the hell are they?
They're on their way,
Sam replied as Zack frowned at him.
A little hocus-pocus crap. I like knowing where Mia is.
Since Mr. Science here clued us in on those readings around her house, I've been keeping tune to her.
She finds out, she'll kick your ass, Zack pointed out.
She won't find out. She doesn't see clearly when it comes to me. She doesn't want to, and it's damn hard getting Mia to do anything she doesn't want.
How are things, you know, going between you?
Sam studied Mac as he drank.
Is that personal or professional interest?
I guess you could say it's both.
Fair enough. I like the way things are going. Can't say I mind keeping her guessing. She's a hell of a lot more complicated than she used to be, and it's interesting, more than I figured, getting to know all the twists and turns.
Zack scratched his chin.
You're not going to start talking about mature relationships and exploring your inner couple or any of that shit, are you?
Shh! Here they come. Mac gestured toward the slash of headlights on the Shell Road.
Let's act like we know what we're doing.
Lucy, who'd been sprawled over the deck, leaped to attention and flew down the steps inches ahead of Mulder.
Pretty women, Zack said. A couple of good dogs and some steaks. Damn good deal.
The steaks were charred, the potatoes slightly underdone, but appetites were keen enough. They ate on the deck, by the strong glow of candles and the backwash of light from the living room, where music pumped out of the stereo. When Sam lifted a bottle of wine to fill Mia's nearly empty glass, she shook her head, laid her hand over the bowl.
No, I'm driving, and I need a clear mind for tomorrow.
I'll come by in the morning, give you a hand with a setup.
No need. Most of it's done, and we have plenty of time tomorrow. I already have 38 pre-sold copies of the hardcover, with orders still coming in, and nearly that many of her backlist set aside. She's going to be very busy tomorrow. I imagine she'll...
Mia trailed off as she caught the look on Nell's face. Her body tensed, and she rose half out of her chair.
Nell? The baby moved.
The expression of shock and astonishment turned to wonder.
I felt the baby, a fluttering inside me.
She laughed, pressed a hand to her belly.
So quick and strong. Zack?
She grabbed his hand, pressed it against her.
Our baby moved.
Do you need to lie down?
No.
She leaped up, tugged his hand.
I need to dance.
You need to dance?
Yes, dance with me.
She threw her arms around his neck.
We'll dance with Jonah.
We don't know it's a boy.
Swamped with love, Zack wrapped his arms around her waist, drew her up to her toes, and held tight.
Might just as easily be a girl. Then it's Rebecca.
Uh-oh, they're getting sappy.
Before it rubbed off, Ripley got up, pointed at Mac.
You're dancing.
Somebody's gonna get hurt, Mac muttered.
Sam watched the entertainment for a moment, then laid a hand on Mia's.
We used to be good at this.
Hmm?
She was staring at Nell, her face wistful and so totally unguarded that seeing it was like a fist to his heart. Tears sparkled on her lashes. What he saw in them was love and longing.
Dancing.
Holding her hand, he stood.
We used to be good at it. Let's see if we still are.
Following impulse, he pulled her down the steps to the bluff. Then he spun her out to arm's length, whipped her back. Her arm hooked smoothly around his neck. Her body fit to his.
Oh, yeah.
He slid his hands down to her hips and began to sway with her.
We're still good.
It had been a long time, but she hadn't forgotten his moves, his rhythm, and she remembered as well the sheer pleasure of moving with him to music. Giving herself to it, she kicked off her shoes. Sand flew under their feet as they turned, dipped, and spun. Dancing had always been a kind of joyful and somehow innocent mating ritual between them, bursts of energy, coordination, anticipation. She stopped hearing the music with only her ears. She heard it in the quick pressure of his hand on her back, the grip of his fingers on hers, the whirl of her own body. When he lifted her off her feet, she threw her head back and laughed. Then she linked her arms around his neck. For the first time in more than a decade, in an embrace that was sheer and simple affection. The applause and whistles exploding from the deck had her shifting her head, leaving her cheek resting against his temple as she caught her breath.
Told you they were show-offs,
Ripley elbowed Mac, but she was grinning.
Hey, we don't have to take this abuse. Come on.
Holding Mia's hand, Sam dashed down the beach steps so that Mia had to run to keep up.
Slow down! You'll break our necks!
I'll catch you.
To prove it, he hauled her up, spun her in circles.
How about a swim?
No.
Okay, we'll dance instead.
He set her on her feet, pulling her close and tight against him. The slow, seductive strains of Sea of Love flowed into the air over the beach.
That's an old one, she remarked.
Classic, he corrected. Change of pace.
He buried his face in her hair as they circled in the sand. Her heart was a steady beat against his. Their legs brushed as she rose on her toes, sliding with him until they formed one shadow in the moonlight. He remembered so much that the shapes and sounds of all the memories whispered and blurred in his brain.
Do they still have dances in the high school gym?
Yes.
Do kids still sneak outside to neck?
Probably.
Let's pretend.
He turned his head, skimming his lips along her jaw before they met hers.
Come back with me.
Before she understood, could think to resist, she found herself spinning. They were no longer dancing on the sand, but wrapped together in the shadows of the high school gym, while a crisp fall breeze blew the scents of aging leaves and blooming mums around them. Music pumped out of the building, a rebel crash of drums and guitars. Her hands rushed over the cool, worn leather of his jacket into the silky warmth of his hair. His body was slimmer, his mouth less skilled, but, oh, how hers responded. The torch of love burned blinding bright inside her. She whispered his name mindlessly and offered everything. It was the ache swelling inside her, throbbing like a wound, that snapped her back. Breath heaving, she shoved him away.
Damn you! Damn you! That wasn't fair!
No, I'm sorry.
His head was spinning. For a moment, he could still smell the crispness of autumn in the humid press of summer air.
No, it wasn't fair. I wasn't thinking. Don't walk away.
He pressed his fingers to his temples as she turned from him. He hadn't planned it and would have found some way to stop the impulse that had taken them back into what they'd been. How could he have known what it would be like to have her love him like that again, to feel that absolute purity of emotion from her? To know he'd tossed it away and might never, never have it again. When he steadied himself, she was standing at the edge of the water, hugging herself and staring out at the night.
Mia.
He went to her but didn't touch her. One of them he was certain would break if he did.
I have no excuse, no way to apologize for that kind of manipulation. I can only tell you I didn't intend to do it.
You hurt me, Sam.
I know.
And myself, he thought, more than I could have realized.
Time can't be erased, and it shouldn't be.
She turned to him now, her face pale against the night.
I don't want to go back to that girl or that boy. I don't want to give up what I've made of myself.
I wouldn't change a thing of what you've made of yourself. You're the most astonishing woman I've ever known.
Words are easy.
No, they're not. Some of them have never been easy for me. Mia.
But when he reached out, she turned away again, then froze as she saw the pale blue light spilling out of the cave.
Stop it! You go too far!
He saw it too, and did touch her now so she would feel and believe him.
I'm not doing it. Wait here.
He set her behind him, then strode quickly toward the cave, stopping only when he stood at the opening, washed in the light. He heard her step beside him, but said nothing as they both looked inside. The light in the cave was soft and blue, the shadows deep and still as wells. In that light were two people, images carved like statues out of the light itself. Then they breathed. The man was beautiful. The sleek muscles of his long, naked body gleamed with water. His hair was glossy black, spilling damp and straight over his shoulders as he stretched on his side in a deep sleep. The woman was beautiful, tall and slender in her dark cloak. She stood looking down at him. The hood was tossed back so the fiery curls of her hair tumbled free to her waist. In her arms she held a pelt,
black as midnight and still wet from the sea. When she turned, Mia saw what seemed to be her own face, with the skin glowing as if a thousand candles were alight beneath it.
"Love,"
the one who had been fire said,
"is not always wise."
She walked toward them, cradling the pelt like a child.
"It has no conditions and no regrets."
She rubbed her cheek against the pelt as she stepped out of the cave.
"Time is shorter than you think."
Mia lifted a hand, a gesture of comfort and command.
"Mother?"
The one who was fire stopped, and her beauty shimmered when she smiled.
"Daughter, I will not fail you. It is not for me."
She traced her fingers along Mia's cheek, and Mia felt a line of warmth.
"Take care not to fail yourself. You're more than I was."
She looked back into the cave.
"You forget too often that he is in you as well."
Hugging the pelt, she turned back until her eyes met Sam's.
"And me in you."
She walked away across the sand.
"It watches in the dark."
And vanished like smoke. The light in the cave winked out.
"I can smell her."
Mia cupped her hands in the air as if it were water and brought it to her face.
"Lavender and rosemary. You saw her amulet?"
He lifted the disc of silver and sunstone that Mia wore on a linked chain.
"This one. The same way I looked at her face and saw this one," he said, lifting Mia's chin.
"I have a lot to think about."
She started to step away, but her gaze was drawn up. As she watched, an inky haze blurred the bright edges of the moon.
"Trouble's coming,"
she whispered, seconds before they heard the growl. Fog spilled in from the sea, crawled up the sand. The wolf, the pentagram a white flash against its black body, waded into the mist and bared its teeth.
For the second time, Sam pushed Mia behind him. His body blocked hers like a shield. "Go, now, get to the house."
"I won't run from this."
She stepped to the side, into clear view, and watched the wolf track her. With no time to wait for her circle, she began the spell alone.
"Air that swirls and spins, arise, build to wind that screams and cries. Tremble, earth beneath the sea, walls of water, build for me."
She speared her hands up through the gale that spewed around her. Her hair blew out wild ropes of red, and at the shout of her voice, the quiet waves of the cove boiled up higher and higher with each crash. The world roared.
"Rage and thrash and whirl for me, air and earth and rising sea, flames within my blood that churns, I conjure from you a circle that burns. Now, you that crawled out of the mire, come if you dare."